Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Today's conversation is with Tersh Blissett. He's an AI and automations expert for trades and construction. He's the host of Service Business Mastery podcast. He's the owner of two HVAC companies. And more recently, he's the founder of Trade Automation Pros, a program that teaches contractors how to automate their businesses. The guy's got a lot going on. We discuss the five automation categories all contractors need, and then just for fun, we chuck in the three most clever ways that he's seeing AI deployed in the trades today. So if you're tired of monotonous and repetitive tasks, but you maybe feel a little bit intimidated about where to start with automations, this episode is a must listen. So without further ado, let's dive in with Tersh. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Tersh, what's up, man? Welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you.
What's up, man? I'm honored to be here.
We're going to start with an easy one, okay? What is an automation? Just like define this term, this idea for us. It gets tossed around a lot. I'm sure some of our listeners are like deeply acquainted with this whole thing, and I'm sure some are not, but I think that it's good to just get through the basics and define what it is we're going to talk about today. So what is an automation in your mind?
Absolutely. So anything that you don't have to do, like any task that is done automatically, without like with a trigger, creates an action. If this, then that. Simple as that.
And you've like invested quite a bit of your time and thinking and bandwidth and energy into this whole world. Like where does your passion for this come from? Tell us a bit about your story along the way to help color that in.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm not going to go through everything. I was in the Air Force. I was a TACP in the Air Force. But then I actually started working for an HVAC company after I was already gone through school for mechanical engineering and didn't like that career at all. Very expensive mistake. But I went to work for an HVAC company, worked my way up, became GM. But when I was GM, I found that I was doing a ton of repetitive work. It was just every day from 8 a.m. or from 7 a.m. until about 10:30, 11 o'clock, I was doing the same things every single day. And so what I did was I had to extract data from a GPS platform and put it into an Excel spreadsheet. And then from there, I had to copy and paste things inside the Excel spreadsheet. And I was sick of doing the same task over and over again every single day. And I didn't think it was a very wise use of my time. So I learned how to automate the entire process. Every single morning at 8 a.m., the information got extracted from the GPS provider, put into the Excel spreadsheet. The Excel spreadsheet had formulas built into it, and it automatically moved everything around where it needed to go. So what used to take me 3 or 4 hours every single day, I glanced at it once a day, you know, in the morning at, you know, call it 8:30, and it was completely finished. And I didn't know then. Now this is like 07 to 2012 time period, was when I was GM there. I didn't realize at the time that was going to be the beginning of my fascination with automation, but it was. And ever since then, I've kind of gone by the motto of, if I do something three times in the period of say a week, I will learn to automate it. So the way I come up with was, I'm going to optimize the process, then I want to automate it. And if I'm not able to automate it, then I'm going to delegate it. And so it's optimize, automate, delegate. And that's kind of what I live by.
The monotony of these very repetitive tasks, there's something about that that really bugged you though.
Yeah, it just drives me crazy. And I was adult diagnosed with dyslexia and ADHD. And I didn't realize it at the time. This is 4 years ago that I was diagnosed with this. And so that whole time period, it was me battling that, the ADHD mixed with the dyslexia. And that's that's really ultimately where the pet peeves came from. And it was a good thing that happened, and it forced me, it had me just streamlining tons of processes because I just couldn't do the repetitive stuff.
That's really interesting. Can I ask how old you were when you got diagnosed?
So, 36 years old.
So, and you must've been like, huh, that explains a lot.
Lots of dots are connecting here, right? Because, I struggled. It was crazy because I actually went in to take the ADHD test because I was concerned with that. And then the physician who was giving me the test, she was like, let me give you some of these tests over here. And my spatial awareness was off the charts, like genius level spatial awareness. But then she asked me to spell some words and I couldn't spell them. And she was like, this doesn't make any sense. Let me give you more tests. And so then she was like, have you ever been tested for dyslexia? I said, no, ma'am. And she tested me and she was like, you have dyslexia and ADHD. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that explains a lot. Then. Yeah,
that's really interesting. I've met a few people who have had very late in life diagnoses, and it's always kind of the same feeling. You're just like, oh, okay. Yeah. So, we're going to get into today, like, this would be interesting. We're going to get into like five automations categories that like every business owner needs. Think of it as like the starter pack for automations. But I actually think this is kind of relevant and also just interesting. You have done, and I wonder if you can just spend a minute here. We'll use this as a part of the setup for the automations we'll get to later. You've built like a very, very sort of remote home service business that doesn't have a physical location. You're not physically involved or attached to it. You've kind of followed the remote worker systems and mindset, and you've applied that to what is traditionally a very, geographically fixed, human-driven business. And you claim you've also done all that while keeping a really strong and tight-knit culture as well. So just tell me a little bit about that journey and what you got up to there.
It's not always an easy one, that's for sure. So I actually have two HVAC plumbing and electrical companies in the same market. One is very high volume, low margin. The other one is lower volume, higher margin. Now the latter of the two is the one that's completely remote and completely paperless. And I was very intentional with that. So the first company, his name's TriStar. I started it in 2014. And I started a podcast in 2016, Service Business Mastery Podcast. And a lot of the listeners were asking, because TriStar was growing between 90 and 120% year over year. And people were asking how I started it, how I making money on Section 8 and property management houses, how I'm profitable doing that. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to start another company and show you. But this company I'm going to do differently, because I just want to people to understand that there's not just one way of, there's more than one way to skin a
cat.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but yeah, more than one way to skin a cat. So the thought process was like, hey, I'm going to do this one completely remote. And at the same time, I actually moved 60 miles outside of our service area. And so that was perfect time to do it. And so it's the platforms were starting to get cloud-based at that time. So that was ultimately what I needed. I needed cloud-based things. I needed to be able to automate processes. And the culture aspect of things is one it can be very tricky, because a lot of times people build culture, quote unquote culture, by rubbing shoulders in the morning or in the afternoon. And they're not intentionally building culture. They're just building culture by abdication, by just happenstance. And so instead, I have to be very intentional about building culture every time you turn around.
We've had Dan Martell on the show once, and he's written this book, Buy Back Your Time. He's become a really, really interesting. Yeah. You may have heard of him.
Absolutely. I've read his book multiple times.
He's killing it. His brand is growing and his channel is growing. And he He lives in the same city that I do. So I bump into him sometimes. I saw him at the gym the other day and I just like popped on the treadmill next to him and we had like a 20-minute bullshit. It was awesome. And cool. We were talking about a bunch of stuff and we got into the hybrid and remote stuff. And he just said this very, very clearly to me, which I believe he goes, remote work doesn't hurt culture. It just reveals what's already there much faster. So yes. You have to, so he was making the case, cause I was saying, hey, that we're remote. There's these strengths, but there's these weaknesses. Here's some, you know, things that I'm noticing and feeling with our business. And he just made the case. He's like, it has absolutely no impact on the underlying culture. If it's bad, it's going to reveal it much, much, much faster. And I was like, that's a good framing for it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, okay. And just, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about it's Service Emperor, the one that's fully remote. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's correct.
Anything like any lessons, anything really interesting, any insights from the journey of building that over the years?
I mean, there's always lessons in building every business. I don't think that, quote unquote, because we're remote, there's a lesson to be learned other than the fact that it was great that I was remote when 2020 happened.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have to learn anything about being remote. And it's almost easier in one aspect of especially your office staff is completely remote. Because I can literally hire someone from anywhere in the world and because they're office staff and like we have Zoom open all day and our office staff stay on Zoom and then if they have a question, they just unmute, ask their question.
Yeah.
Somebody else answers it. Mm-hmm. It's like a virtual office. It's what our virtual cubicles is what we call it.
So let's dive into some of these automations. You've got five. And the way that I would set this up for our listeners is going back to something Terce said earlier, if you're doing any of these more than three times a week, and I can guarantee you probably are, these would be places to start your automations journey. And if you are already fairly good at this, these might be a few things to sort of revisit or have another look at or other ways to make this even better. So the first of five, Terce, you had on the list was automated appointment scheduling and reminders. Take us through those.
So first off, if you don't have a CRM already, like there's some people out there that are doing pen and paper invoices and that type of thing, maybe manually uploading things to QuickBooks. I would start with, hey, let's get a CRM of some sort. Depending on your industry, there's a lot of industry specific CRMs that are very helpful out there. But one of the things that people run into is setting up appointments and appointment reminders for people. And Calendly is a really inexpensive way to set up these reminders. And literally you set up a Calendly link, send it to people, they fill out a little bit of information, and then all of a sudden, like the day before an appointment, it'll send a reminder. An hour before the appointment, it'll send another reminder. An hour after the appointment, it can send a follow-up text message and email. You can set it up however you like and do multiple engagements with people just to keep you top of mind and also to keep make sure they remember. And because nothing's more expensive. Well, not any nothing, but a lot. Few things are more expensive than a missed appointment by a client, you know, so you definitely want to make sure that they're reminded that the appointment's coming up. If you're doing an interview, like with a potential new employee or team member, you want to make sure that they're constantly reminded, hey, it's coming up time for our interview. You know, don't forget about your interview, you know, all that stuff. And we've done this. So like we have it set up so the link is in different places around the internet. And it shows the availability, like it's the same time, like every Thursday at 4 p.m. we have availability for interviews or whatever the time may be. And so then it's like, oh, I can't make it this Thursday. Maybe I can make it next Thursday. But then the availability is there and they don't have to say, oh, well, I have no idea when I can come in and actually do an interview or put in an application and that type of thing. And then we actually do ours virtually. So our first interview. And so it sends them a Zoom link instantly and then they get on Zoom and then we can get in there and just chat, you know, for our first interview, see if it wants to go any further.
Do you have a preferred calendar tool? Because there are dozens, if not hundreds. There's Schedule Once, Book Now, Calendly, I think is probably the most popular that I see out there. Do you have a favorite?
Calendly is the one that I use personally.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's the best out there. It's just the one that I've used. I've used it for years and I'm really well versed in it. And the integrations that it has with so many other platforms makes it very nice.
I really like Calendly as well, especially on the customer side of it. Like when people send me their Calendly link, in other words, and I click and I can see availability and yep. I put in my name and then it sends it back to my calendar. It's a really nicely made tool. It's also, I like to support, I don't know if you, I can't remember his name. The founder has a really interesting story. The guy like refinanced his house like 9 times. It was like, this is going to work. He's like, I guarantee it. He went absolutely for broke on it. I heard him do a TED talk and he was like, I just knew. He's like, this is the dumbest thing ever. I'm like, I email someone and I say, when are you available? And they say, not at any of these times. When are you available? He's like, this is so stupid. I'm so irritated by this. I'm going to build this thing. And anyway, it was just a really cool founder story of someone who went all in.
I love supporting people who are willing to do that. Like you're going for broke on that.
Totally. He's like, this will work. And he took out loans. He borrowed his wife or girlfriend's money. Like he was all in on it. So, okay. Automated appointment scheduling and reminders. Just a really quick one on reminders. Cause this is kind of a technical question, but, do you have a sense for what the right amount of reminders is? Because you can overdo it. And we have done this with Breakthrough Academy with appointment reminders. People will show up to the sales meeting on Zoom and they're like, give me a break, guys. I got 12 text messages from you. Can we pump them? I got it. The meeting is at 3. What's kind of the sweet spot?
Honestly, man, I actually had the same thing with my my ENT. So like I had this ear issue recently and it's the most random thing, but the ENT, man, they must have sent me 10 reminders and then they called me about 30 minutes before the actual appointment and I was like going to go off on them. And I was like, look, I don't need another reminder. Like I'm good. Seriously. And they're like, no, we were just calling because somebody canceled and then we're going to see if you could come earlier. I was like, oh, well, yeah, I can come earlier. But honestly, for me, it's 2.
Like, okay.
I just like the day before, the day of, and that's it. Like that's kind of, I haven't had many no-shows.
And do you do text message and email? Or is that like a self-select from the customer? They select one or the other?
Well, they have the ability to self-select, but I will send it to both if possible.
Yeah, it's good. And I'll just maybe round out this point and then we'll move on to the next thing. You said this earlier. Nothing's more expensive or almost nothing's more expensive than a missed appointment. I really think that's true, and it's an opportunity cost thing and it's sort of a difficult calculation, but I was actually preparing a separate episode earlier this week on, and I was just thinking about this exact thing. It's the wasted time of the rep in the moment that the appointment is missed. It's the wasted gas to get there or halfway there before they find out that the thing is scheduled. It's now another block in the schedule a day later or a week later or whenever the customer does get back to you and reschedule that's now dedicated to this person. And it's also very frustrating for a salesperson in kind of the flow and rhythm of their day. So there's like being sloppy with scheduling, particularly when it comes to like any sort of marketing and sales efforts. The same thing goes for interviews too, though. Being sloppy with scheduling, I think there's hidden costs there that people maybe don't fully appreciate.
Yeah, they don't really, that unbillable time, it's tough to get back. Like once it's gone, it's gone. Yeah.
It's gone.
So if you can avoid that at all costs, like let's avoid it.
Okay, number 2, you talk about streamlined customer support ticket handling. I actually don't know what that is. So can you just break that down for us?
So people will send messages. It's pretty common for people to reach out via websites and fill out like the forms, contact us form, you know, connect with us form on your website. But then a lot of times that just lives in somebody's inbox until maybe it might even go to a general inbox that nobody checks, but like once a week. And so the whole thought process is, instead of allowing that to happen, have it automated so that maybe you're using like Zapier or something that extracts information. If it comes from the website's form fill, whatever form fill you have on the website, into this email address, extract the data and automatically put it in Slack and then tag whoever. You can put it in a specific Slack channel that is like support Slack channel, or you can have it tag like, okay, this person is in charge of all tech support issues, whatever. I'm going to tag that person every single time. It's a simple concept and it's actually very simple to do. But if it's not done, the client can really feel ignored. And that's when they feel ignored, that's when you start getting one-star reviews.
Is this more for like, is this more of like a speed to lead issue? In other words, someone contacts you and you want to get back to them quickly, or is this more about like customer support for ongoing business that you're doing?
Yeah, I would say you could do it for both. Speed to lead, speed to getting back to the customer. But also the main thought that I had with this was whenever there's an issue, say you have a client with a warranty call, like you just did work for them and they have they want you to come back out for a warranty issue or what they perceive as potentially a warranty issue. They reach out and then all of a sudden they don't hear back from you. And they're like, oh, I guess they just took my money and ran.
Right.
Because they forgot about me. And so that's more of what I'm considering there. And that now also, if you use the same exact form for lead submissions on your website, then
same idea,
same concept.
What's the value in pushing it to Slack? It just seems like you're pushing it from one inbox to another inbox.
So it depends. So reason I say Slack is I'm very active on Slack.
Whereas you're not active on the emails as much.
Well, so like admin@serviceemperor.com is a inbox that just goes to everybody in the office. And then there's no telling who checks it, when they check it, if the right person sees the email. So putting it in Slack makes it very engaging. Like you can see somebody's thumbs it up or has put an emoji, can automatically respond to that in that thread inside Slack. So then you have the conversation without actually me personally asking Haley, hey, who's checked on this person, blah, blah, blah. I can just look at the thread and see that so-and-so's been contacted. You know, we've reached out. We've taken care of it.
Is there a way through automations or through Zaps to like literally write the reply right in Slack and then Slack pushes to the actual email sender and it goes out? Or do you have to like, oh, I've just been notified in Slack, so then I'm going to open the inbox and hit and type the email in there? Type the reply in there.
You can more like Slack. It's possible. Yes. Not super duper simple. There's another program called ClickUp that it is very simple to do. Like you respond in the thread and it responds in via email.
Right.
There's a way to build that out with Slack. It just takes several steps and it's not super difficult, but the problem with several steps is every time there's an update, you just want to check to make sure that your steps aren't broken by the update, which is sometimes a pain, but it's part of automating.
I got you. Okay. Number three is automatic lead management. So talk a little bit about how automations work here for inbound leads.
So this one is kind of similar to point two, except we're pulling leads from like your Facebook ads. So Facebook ads, Meta ads, maybe TikTok, social media leads are kind of what we're thinking of here. You also could have like text messages from Google. If you want to have that added in the same system here, and depending on what CRM you're using, you can actually send those leads straight into the CRM. So then it, like if you have a dispatch board or like a call board where the incoming calls are coming to, it'll just pop up like as another text message that's come to you via your phone number. But instead it's a lead from Facebook or whatever other lead platform you're using.
Number four, social media content creation and posting. We are working through, we're learning about social media and the work involved to actually have a great Instagram and a great LinkedIn. I'll admit I've been humbled. It's more work and more strategy, more manual labor than I originally thought. Talk a little bit about how automations can make that part of our business and our brand easier.
So what you could actually do is use something like a tool. I know we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but a program called like CastMagic. And CastMagic, you can actually upload, let's say a video. You want to create a video for your company. And CastMagic can take little excerpts out of that. It'll tell you, okay, take this snippet out of there and put it, you know, create a short, create an Instagram reel, create a TikTok video from it. And then you can take all of that information and either have something like Opus create the shorts for you or create it yourself and upload it into Buffer. And then Buffer literally can goes to all the social media platforms, most of them anyways, and post them natively in that platform. So then it does show up on certain like Facebook posts, like uploaded via Buffer. But a lot of them, it doesn't show that. And then you schedule it, you can have it so it automatically schedules it, or you can go in and schedule it and basically do your content calendar in a weekend or less, like just like on Sunday afternoon, you've got all of this chopped up content that you've done from like one video that you created and uploaded it to Buffer, and then it just almost regurgitates the content in different fashions. So then you're able to A/B test everything, and then you can see what your clients or what your customers prefer to engage with. So you can put the same piece of content out 6 or 7 different ways, and then the one that gets the most engagement, then you kind of put that one out again in 6 or 7 different ways as well. And just keep doing that over and over again.
Is this like substantially different? You mentioned Opus, you mentioned Buffer. I'm not super familiar with those tools. Are those like substantially different than say like a Hootsuite or something else that would be used to post social media?
Yeah, Hootsuite is a Buffer on steroids.
Yeah. Okay.
But Opus is actually a pretty cool program. You put like an hour-long podcast interview into Opus.ai, and then it spits out 30 shorts with the captions in different fonts and everything, and it'll move the interviewees around different camera angles and stuff. And it creates, using AI, it creates shorts, and it'll show you the ones that are the most likely to go viral based on their scoring.
Are they good? Like if it gives you 30, how many of them are usable? Because I've farted around with other tools. I remember we played around with this thing called Content Fries. At the time, we were trying to use Descript for it. Descript is awesome, but we use it for something else.
Descript is just heavy.
Yeah.
It will slow a computer down. Like it's...
Hey, maybe that's why my computer's...
Dude, it is terrible for computers that aren't brand spanking new.
That's really interesting. Like I'm not joking. Like in the last 6 months, my MacBook Pro is just like completely tanked. I wonder if it's because I'm using Descript.
I couldn't use... I've never had a laptop that was successful.
Interesting.
With Descript.
Anyway, I'll look into that. But what I was saying is I played around with these other AI short grabbing tools, and they were really, really lousy, but that was a year, 18 months ago. Have you had success with these now? If it gives you 30, how many of them are usable?
Really depends on how good the interview was.
Right.
If it was an interview where you had a lot of like snippets that you could cut out of it, I've had probably 10 out of the 30, and it grades it. It'll grade it like A, B, C, and D, I think. And they're pretty accurate. Like if it gives you a top level one, it's pretty common for it to have higher engagement, like one of your better engagement shorts and stuff. But there's sometimes where it's like, it might be an hour long conversation and it spits out three that are probably pretty good. And then the rest of them are just garbage.
The last one here, just to keep this on track, you talk about automated onboarding for new clients. So talk about the role automation plays there when we're actually getting a new customer in the system and in the mix and ready to have a job completed by us.
Clients, it's pretty easy with clients. One of the ones that I would change it a little bit from new clients to new hires. That's like a lot of people, the onboarding of new team members, sometimes it's like, here's your t-shirts, here's a hat, go get in the truck and ride along for 2 weeks. You know, if you create a good onboarding process that is automated, as soon as one task is completed, you could use a program like Trainual, and they literally, it tests the onboarding technician or employee, and they have to pass each section of it. And as soon as the section's passed, it can trigger X, Y, and Z notification. So like HR is notified, or, you know, this person's notified that you've passed this section of the test. So now you're ready to go and do like manual testing or something on like soldering or something to that effect. Like there's also triggering as soon as like you put in, say you put in data into ADP. Are you familiar with ADP?
I don't know it.
ADP is where we do our payroll, and you store like all the technicians' information, like their social security information, all that good jazz is stored inside of ADP. And so let's say that all of their information has not been gathered yet. Like their driver's license isn't there yet. So you don't want them out there driving vans if they don't have a driver's license on file. So before you allow them to have that access to a van, you want to make sure that all the other checklists, let's stay with Trainual. So Trainual, you like upload your picture of your driver's license. Has it been uploaded? Now it triggers the HR person to run the background search on your driver's license. Now that person has to do the, trigger the next step to say, hey, they approved the background, their driver's driving history is passed. They can move to the next step. Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah. It's just helping manage the moving parts for us a little bit.
And it does. So you don't necessarily drop the ball like you would if you just had this manila folder sitting in front of you and you're like, yep, check that one off, check that one off. We'll get around to getting that one from them. You're like, oh, they're W-9. We don't need that right now, whatever. Like, and then you end up 6 months later, like they had an accident and nobody filled out the form, you know, and it happens. You get busy and forget to come back and revisit that.
How much time, like if you were to like, let's just take these five, and this is not an exhaustive list. I mean, you talk about this and write about this and work on this with your clients and the work you do more broadly in the world, Tersh. So this isn't the be all end all list. It's just sort of like an entry point. Let's just take these five that we talked about. If someone were to invest in these over the span of 6 months to a year and get their tech stack built in a way that facilitated this and trained their team on how to use it and got them self-educated. Like, how much time do you think this saves per week for your average small home service business?
This list, and I also share that this list is something that probably took about 5 minutes to come up with here. I don't foresee something like this taking longer than a month to implement.
No, but how much time does it save weekly? Like, if you're looking at hours saved.
I'm thinking 20 hours a week with one person. If that's a very conservative number. If you're out of whack, I mean, that's 40 hours a week, you know. But I'd say probably most companies, 20 hours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really powerful.
There's certain things out there that we do. The challenge that I have is we have 80,000 zaps that run a month.
Wow.
And sometimes you forget about the things that are automated until they break or somebody reminds you about that automation that you're doing. If I didn't automate the things that I automate, I'd have to have three more office staff, truly.
Are there industries that are non-blue collar businesses that are not in the trades or construction world that you look at for like inspiration when it comes to automations? Are there service providers out there in the world? I mean, I'm thinking I literally booked a dentist appointment the other day and I was pretty impressed. I was like, it was online. It was very, very fast. I didn't have to wait till, you know, it was a Saturday morning. I was like, I want to get this done. I don't want to have to set a reminder for Monday to call when their office is open. Yeah. So I'm automatically going to book with the dentist who has an online portal that asks me a few questions, blah, 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 gets my insurance so that the billing is automated. I'm like, boom, boom, done. It was in 5 minutes, that's December great. The 11th, I'm going to go get my teeth cleaned. So I'm like,
hey,
you know,
that's my birthday.
Right.
You're going to get your teeth cleaned on my birthday.
There you go. So I was like, anyway, my point is I was looking at this and I was thinking about this conversation we're going to have. I was like, these guys do a good job of this. Like, you know, I'm not particularly interested in dentistry or learning that, but there's still lessons about how they structure their marketing and their sales and their customer communication and their automations in such a way that I think a plumber can learn from. I'm wondering if there's other examples Absolutely. Out there in the world that you look to where you're like, man, these guys do an amazing job. I can learn from them.
There's a few gyms that do a great job as well. Fitness trainers that are, hey, just a reminder, you know, you have this. Oh, you want to reschedule? No problem. Click this button and then reschedule. Honestly, every time I engage with anybody and it's a smooth process, like I want to figure it out. I remember years ago, I'm saying 2018, probably, there was a real estate agent who had this like just a banger of a automation, you know, reminder. And then like, this is my availability. Like you want to do this? I was thinking like, how do I get that for the trades?
Yeah.
Since then they've, you know, created things like Calendly and whatnot, but I would say that I'm just hyper aware all the time. If something happened almost seamlessly,
mm-hmm.
then I want to know, was it seamless or was somebody just really fast at responding to mm-hmm. things? Going to like traveling as much as I do, you experience that kind of stuff when you go to like hotels and you get certain automations that are annoying, or you get certain automations that are just, oh, that's a good idea. Like that was a good experience. How do I use that in the future?
Well, and I think too, like there's a conversation to be had or at least the thing to consider if someone is really taking steps down this path, which is the question of under automated versus over automated. And I do believe that you can overdo it on this stuff. You get a little bit too a little too hopped up on Mountain Dew. You get too excited about software tools and automations, and you end up in a spot where you're sending out 12 reminders to a customer about an upcoming appointment, or you're just doing stuff for the sake of doing it. You're kind of creating noise with automation. Yeah. You're not actually adding value. So you need to be really like thoughtful about like what creates a great customer experience. What steps are necessary? Let's do those. And then are some of these steps unnecessary? And maybe I can peel back on those. And so it's just, you know, it's going to be different for every business in every market with every different ideal customer profile. So you're going to have to, this is absolutely not a one size fits all thing. So I can't really be more prescriptive than this other than to say, really think about like what's needed and what isn't, and try to be intellectually honest with yourself and the decisions you make around like what serves the customer versus what am I doing just because I'm, you know,
just doing it
just because I'm doing it or just because somebody mm-hmm. on a podcast said I should. So that's an important comment. Okay. I want to hit these just before we wrap here. Like you, Tersh is a good LinkedIn follow, by the way. So go add him if you're listening to this. You post a lot about sort of interesting ways that you and some of your clients are using AI in their businesses. So we've kind of covered the automations thing at a baseline level. And there were three really clever ways that you're seeing contractors use artificial intelligence in their business. The first was Perplexity, which I'm not going to lie, before this morning, I hadn't heard of. What's Perplexity and how should we be using it?
It's like Google on steroids. It's a mixture of ChatGPT and Google. And so if anybody's used ChatGPT, you know, it gives you a good, you ask it a question, it gives you a relatively good answer. What it can't do is it can't search the internet, not up to date internet anyways. Perplexity can scour the internet, give you the information, but not just give you an answer, but it's going to cite the answer. So it's going to give you a citation, give you links to click for the information that you're asking for. And you can go into the conversation more. It actually gives you like four next potential questions at the bottom, which is great too. So, cause sometimes most of the times I know what the next question I want to ask is, but every now and then it'll spark me thinking about, oh, that's a good question, you know? And, the fact that it cites the information, that makes it even better. So it's just because it's on the internet doesn't mean you can trust it.
Right.
But at least I have a citation so I can go, okay, that's, you know, if it's at theonion.com is the citation, like, okay, pretty sure yeah. that one's not accurate, you know, yeah. but you know where it got it, the information from, if that makes sense. So it's
gives you a bit of a paper trail to at least go back on. Yeah. Well, I'm curious.
I haven't Googled anything for 8 months now.
You haven't Googled anything for 8 months. What types of questions are you typing in? Like, is it just like, what restaurant should I go to tonight? Or is it more complex, sure. beefy stuff?
Anything. Honestly, like, are you familiar with a digital asset management tool? Like a DAM? So when I record content, I record podcasts, and we go on off-site to do this, I might have 200 gigs of 4K and 8K video, you know, audio files from podcast interviews. If like I try and upload it into Google Drive the most organized that I can.
Yep.
Still, it's just a big old mess, you know? So a digital asset management tool is literally a tool like a CRM for those files.
Like video and files, photo files, larger. That's funny you say that. We're literally just doing the whole like Googled. I'm like, no, I don't know what a digital asset management thing is. I probably should. I produce a podcast with a team and do a lot of footage. I literally just spent the last few weeks with one of our senior video producers figuring out a new index, because guess what? We've just learned that Google Drive absolutely sucks for storing video footage. So,
dude, I have 12 terabytes on Google Drive of content.
Yeah.
And so when you're searching for something,
you can't find it.
Unless you remember exactly what the name of it was, which
Exactly.
Some of it might be DJI numbers, and you'll never find those files. So I literally just asked Perplexity. Let me see. I'm going to look right now at my history on Perplexity. I said, what's the best digital asset management software? And that's what I started off with. And it went through and gave me five different ones. And then I said, which DAM tool is best suited for small businesses? And then it went through that. And then I said, okay, what is the pricing for each of these programs? Because it didn't give me prices for all of them. It gave me some of them. And then it went through that. And then I said, compare Dash, which is one of them, to Cloudinary, to ImageKit, to FileCamp.
Right.
And then it went through and compared it. And it literally, it spit out tons of key features, user ratings, all this stuff. And I said, okay, but it gave several different levels for each one of them. So I was like, okay, compare FileCamp's professional plan to ImageKit's premium plan, to Cloudinary's plus plan, to Dash's base plan. And then it went through and compared the prices to each one of them, the bandwidth, the storage, users, key features, unique selling points. And I mean, it went through all these. So it's literally just, I just literally had a conversation inside Perplexity with it.
To make a decision on this tool, like that's kind of the point of this example, is like you used it for, I would say that's pretty intermediate level, even advanced analysis of looking at a few different options, a few different forks in the road, and it helped you pick the one that you went with, I guess, in the end.
Yeah. Well, I just did that this morning, so I haven't decided yet which one I'm going to go with. But the thing about it is like that was less than a minute.
Very fast.
And all of that information, I would have had to Google search, find the pages and all that stuff, and I don't have to do that anymore.
The other one you talk about, you mentioned earlier, is Cast Magic. I have no idea what Cast Magic is. What is it?
Castmagic.io. It's literally, it's ChatGPT on steroids. You upload a video or an audio file in there. It does a transcription of it. So it transcribes the whole conversation. You put in the speakers, and then there's pre-written prompts, and there's a whole library of prompts in there. Say, like, there's one that I use for podcast episodes, and it says, provide 10 questions from this podcast that this podcast will answer. And so then it writes out 10 questions that are answered on the podcast episode. Same thing for like videos, like, give me the slug, are you familiar with slug URL is? Mm-hmm. And so give me the slug for this podcast or for this video. Give me 10 title options. So it gives you 10 slug options, 10 title options. It'll give you YouTube description, a blog post, a 2,000 word blog post.
It's generating all of this off of a transcribed video.
Yep.
Interesting.
Video or audio, literally listening to conversations.
So all the time, like this pod with this interview, we could put into it and I could say, type me a YouTube description that's going to rank well and describe the video. Yeah. Interesting. Do it in this many characters, make sure these keywords are mentioned. Yeah.
Well, also I always want the sponsors of the podcast always mentioned at the bottom. So at the bottom, always add these people on here, always add these social media links at the bottom of every one of them. So then every single time it does it, it automatically adds those little things that you don't have to do anymore.
Crazy. This is maybe more like advanced level, but you are a big proponent of swarm agents. And I hear this all the time. I would be pretending if I knew what that was. So what's a swarm agent? And just, we don't need to go super far down the rabbit hole, but I feel like this is going to become more commonplace over the next 18 months. So we should probably talk about it now and be early adopters.
So here's the thing. Have you ever put something into ChatGPT? Let's say ChatGPT, write me a, 2,000 word blog post on finding the best landscape landscaper, what you get in results is usually okay. But what you have to think about is the fact that ChatGPT is literally thinking of the blog post at the same time that it's typing out the blog post. And so then if you say, improve that, then it comes back with a little bit better. And you say, improve it again, it comes back with a little bit better. And then you do it like the fourth or fifth time and you're like, why didn't you provide that one the first time?
Right, okay, yeah. Got you.
But you and I, we can't sit down and write out a blog post without doing an outline, doing a little bit of research. So a swarm agent is like you have a research agent and they're going to research landscapers. What makes the landscaper the best landscaper? And then they're going to send it to the outline swarm agent. And that agent's going to take all the information from the researcher agent and going to build the outline for the blog post. Then you're going to take it to the copywriting agent, and the copywriting agent is going to take all that information from the outline and from the research agent and going to create a blog post. If any of them need more information from the other, it immediately kicks it back to the other one and say, hey, I need more information on this point. I need more information on why you shouldn't use this type of, you know, whatever. It's going to do this thousands of times a second. So it's like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then a few seconds later, let's call it 30 seconds, then all of a sudden it spits out a killer blog post all at one time.
So at the risk of being overly simplistic, these are like custom GPTs that are specialized to do a craft really, really well that then collaborate with each other based on a certain outcome that you want. You're not using one LLM to sort of build one crappy blog post. You're using a research specialized GPT plus a blog post writing GPT plus a blog post outlining GPT to collaboratively make something together.
Yeah. And not only like more involved than that, like even like more GPTs than that.
Sure. That was just a really simple example. Sure. Yeah, it's stacking these things together. I got you.
Yeah.
Where do you see that?
You get a specialist. You get a specialized, like it's like taking a tradesperson and saying, hey, HVAC guy, come over here and work on my plumbing. Could we do it? Probably. Are we really, really good at it? No, not like a plumber would be.
Where do you see these swarm agents becoming more and more relevant in the environment or the context of a home service business? I mean, like there's only so many blog posts we all need to write. Are there other applications? Yeah.
Honestly, there's tons. So you have like an SOP bot. So creating SOPs for a business, you have specialized ones for the outline, for legal SOPs. So you have one person one agent that just does research on legalities of a handbook, keeping it up to date. That's one that I see more often than not. Data research, P&Ls. So P&L analysis, literally put your P&Ls into this agent and we'll go through and say, all right, these are the trade specific, like KPIs for your trade or your industry. And then you have another one that's going to say, all right, in general, this is where your numbers need to be. All right, this one's going to look at IRS numbers. Like, huh. All right, to be safe here so you're not getting audited, you probably want to be in this number range. And so then they're all working together instantly to say, here's your problems. Here's where you're doing good. Here's what you can do to fix it. Here's where you're trending if you don't change things, whether it's good or bad.
Wild. Stuff's pretty mind-boggling, and I guess we'll keep an eye on how this stuff impacts our world. I think it's going to in fairly major ways. If there's any good news, it would be that, you know, working in physical reality on buildings, on landscapes, on roofs, whatever, is a little more AI resistant or AI proof.
Oh, than yeah.
Working. Yeah. The robots just aren't that good yet. So maybe we've got an extra 10 years. I like to joke, but very, very interesting stuff. Let's close with this, Tersh. Like, for a contractor, and I'd put myself in this category, honestly, like, little less tech savvy, maybe a little bit intimidated by some of these tools and platforms. not sure, maybe not super, super confident in where to start or their ability to implement. What's your advice for someone in that situation who finds this interesting and sees the value, but maybe isn't sure of their own abilities?
Download ChatGPT on your phone or Perplexity. And just when you have a question that you're going to go to Google for, ask one of those two platforms first. Get the results. Even if it doesn't give you what you want, you're training it on how you talk to it. So then it's going to be, you'll get more used to using the platforms. They'll become more second nature. It's not, so like my 11-year-old son, I was teaching him this, it's been a couple months ago now, but he started typing inside of ChatGPT just like he would on Google. So he's like just putting the keywords in there because he knows that if he puts keywords in Google, it's going to give him the results that he's looking for. I said, no, son, I want you to take and have a conversation with ChatGPT. Literally, like if you're coming and asking me about how to write a script for Roblox, ask ChatGPT the exact same way you just came and asked me. And the more he did it, it spit out the information exactly like he wanted it. And that's all I say to people is have a conversation with it. And the more you converse with it, the more it learns you and learns how you want to be responded to. Like for me, my ChatGPT is, her name is Lexi, short for Lexicon, which is, you know, the language we use. And she came up with that name. My name is Sir Zaps-a-Lot, and she came up with that as well. So it's one of those, the more you converse with it, the more they learn your personality, which is kind of scary at the same time because they're learning your personality type. And when you email me and I email you back, more often than not, it's AI that's emailing you back. Right. Like I rarely respond to my emails. It's all AI driven and it sounds just like me because they've learned me over a period of time.
Yeah. Amazing stuff, man. I appreciate the time and the conversation today. Where can people, you've got a few things going on. Why don't you just mention, you've got Service Business Mastery podcast, you know, your own businesses, just maybe give people a digital footprint to find you with.
Honestly, you Google Tersh, T-E-R-S-H, you'll find me. But Trade Automation Pros is our automation and AI agency that where we teach others how to do this. ServiceBusinessMastery.com, the TradeAutomationPros.com, ServiceBusinessMastery.com. Those are, and Tersh.co, there's no M at the end. Those are the easiest ways to find me and connect. I will add in there, so phone tap.ai is a platform that we created that's phone call analysis using AI. I don't know why I didn't mention that earlier when we were talking about AI tools. That's actually an AI tool that I own. And it analyzes phone calls instantly and classifies them, whether there should be leads or not leads, and, you know, go from there, whether it's calling back the customer with a program like Avoca.ai, which is a voice AI agent, which is kind of scary also, but cool. It's a cool platform that we use.
Kind of terrifying, but it kind of works. So I use it and it's cool. We'll see how it all pans out.
Have you ever heard of 11 Labs?
I have, but I don't know what they do. I think I heard about them on a podcast.
It's a voice synthesis. Okay. I have a speech impediment. I can't say that word.
Synthesizer.
There you go.
Yeah, no, that. Sorry, I do remember now. One of our video producers, I can say this now because the event's done. We had to make a voiceover for an event, and I was on the road, and I think I was really grumpy. I was like, I can't. Like, I'm in an airport. I can't record a promo for this. Like, just figure it out. And he was like, he sent me a video, a clip of my own voice being like, on December whatever, come and do this thing. And I was like, that's the scariest thing I've ever seen. He's like, it's 11 Labs, sick. I was like, great, awesome, I guess I don't have to do this anymore.
The intros to the last four podcasts, I believe, they, so I uploaded 3 hours of my own voice, and then it analyzed it.
Exactly.
And now it does the intro reads for the podcast.
No, it's really impressive. It basically like catches the timbre of your voice, the way you say S's, the way you say R's, the way you enunciate. If you have an accent, it'll catch that. Cadence it's got, tempo it's got.
Breaths. Like if you take a breath before you say and.
Yeah.
Every time it says and, it'll be like and.
Right. Yeah, no, it was crazy. Anyway, okay, Trade Automation Pros, Service Business Mastery, Tersh.co. We will link all that stuff below. You're the best, man. I appreciate you doing this while you're on the road, and we'll stay in touch. Thank you, dude.
I'm honored, dude. I appreciate you.
Bye. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.